Hey guys, before we start the podcast, I just want to let you guys know that we are on Google Play Music now. So for all your friends who have Androids and didn't download Stitcher Radio to get us on there, they could find us on the Google Play Store. What? We're right there on their phones.
What?
They got no excuses.
What?
So make your fucking friends with Androids listen to us.
Pew pew pew. As an Android.
Thank you. Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to the Inner Conclave of Nerddom, aka another episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Daze, and I am your pop culture and sports nerd. Ali?
I am Ali, your classic nerd.
And I'm V, your comic book nerd.
Guys, it's been a big week for nerds everywhere.
Okay.
The biggest jock nerds of all have had their big fix over the weekend.
What does that mean?
The Fast 8, Furious... The Fate of the Furious is what they're calling that shit now.
What?
What?
The Fast
and the Furious.
The car movie. Can I just say...
The Rock.
That when that movie first came out, if you had asked me...
they'd make
eight of those movies. I would have punched you in your throat as a liar and a heathen.
You know what the thing is? Is people don't...
the fact that they made eight of those movies, right, is what boggles my mind. When there's so many great series that they've canceled... Yeah. But we need eight movies about cars that go really fast.
No, first off.
Don't tell me there's a plot.
Stop.
There's no plot.
Let me correct you here, okay?
There's a Tokyo plot.
All right.
There's a regular plot.
In the first one.
Part two.
What was that movie with what's his face? Keanu Reeves, where he was like.
Point Break?
Yeah. I am an FBI agent. There's a remake of Point Break. This is what. Fast and Furious was supposed to be a remake of like,
and then they remade Point Break anyway, though, didn't they?
Yeah, they did anyway, and that didn't end up well. But like, it was basically Point Break, but with cars, and you know, and the first one, they're racing, they pull a little couple heists in it, you know, they steal DVD players and CD players and shit from some trucks. In the second one, they're racing again, you know, but then they're working with like customs agents to. Get this drug dealer.
Third one, they're in Tokyo.
It's all about racing and drifting, right?
Look, don't tell me there's a plot. There isn't.
No. Because here's where...
There's a plot plus Rock.
It's supposed to be a movie about drag racing, but somehow it's shifted to now these drag racers have become the world's best spies. They get hired by like these government agencies to go on these missions and like, you must take down this number one criminal from Interpol.
So it's like Interpol.
Interpol.
So it's like AAA. They mixed XXX into there too.
Basically, because Vin Diesel was in XXX. So
that's
like,
true.
Well, we saw you do that in one of them movies. So,
there's a great, if anyone knows what episode this is from, because it's a great episode of The Simpsons where there Otto is driving the bus and Milhouse is all like, it's like Speed 2, but it's on a bus instead of a boat. Right? It's kind of the same thing. It reminds me a lot of that. Why are we talking about... I saw something the other day where the Fast and the Furious franchise actually beat out Star Wars for the opening numbers.
Okay. Excuse me? Say that again?
Yeah, they actually beat out... Worldwide opening numbers beat out Star Wars.
No way.
I could be wrong. I remember hearing about that.
They probably made more money than Star Wars.
This is why the terrorists hate us.
No. They may have made more money than Star Wars now combined because they have eight movies.
I'm just saying, this is why the terrorists hate us.
They have eight... So they
because of the Fast and the Furious.
Think about it, bro. They have eight movies.
When did the Fast and Furious come out?
When we were in high school, so 2002?
No, maybe? 2000.
I'm sure Osama bin Laden saw it.
It was, yeah, it may have been 2001. 2002.
Putting it out there.
Wow, you're going to blame Fast.
But I'm not blaming anything.
The first one was
I'm
the
just
bad.
Saying it may play a factor in the reason.
Seriously, I mean, you know, he probably watched a lot of movies.
Hey, you know what's trippy? So in the first.
There's actually a great article about how, like, genocide in Indonesia and stuff, they often modeled themselves out of, like, classic gangster movies and stuff.
What the fuck? Like, yeah, Scarface and like.
Yeah. They saw themselves in those like.
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
So, no, here's the thing, man. In the first movie, when Paul Walker's character goes into Vin Diesel's house, they're playing a Ludacris song. Like, move.
And then Ludacris ends up in
And then Ludacris ends up in the second one. So, in that universe, who is Ludacris? Is he Teddy?
You know, there's considered one of the best improv lines is a Ludacris and the Rock moment.
No, it's the Rock and Tyrese. So
big ass forehead.
Tyrese goes, "Yeah, did you bring enough baby oil?" He's like, "Did you bring enough sunscreen to cover that big ass forehead?" And Ludacris spits out his drink because he wasn't expecting the Rock to hit him back with that.
The Rock is a
It's actually genius. Very, very comedically. Yeah. His comedic timing is actually on
par. Well, if you ever saw the stuff, like all of his behind-the-scenes stuff with Kevin Hart.
He's actually very funny.
They're hilarious together. Yeah.
When they're recording
He's a legitimately other. Funny guy. He's like one of those few people that...
Get the fuck out my Snapchat.
Can do drama. Is actually really scary looking, but it's really funny.
Yeah. Him and Vin Diesel have been beefing.
But see, like, this is my big issue with where they bought there, because there's only world... The world is only big enough for one bald head.
Vin Diesel is claiming that he is responsible for part of The Rock's success.
Okay, yeah. Well, shut up. Vin, sit down.
He's also is an avid D&D player.
Yeah, he is. But what is Vin Diesel really known for besides?
Fast and the Furious.
There's Chronicles of Riddick.
Triple X.
Triple X, which is Fast and the Furious, but just with Vin Diesel.
And Ice Cube, occasionally.
Ice Cube showed up in the second one.
Yeah, but if you think about it, Triple X is Fast and the Furious with just Vin Diesel. It's like, that's what he does when he's on break.
He was in Boiler Room.
Whatever.
Oh, he was. He was like the one guy that Giovanni Ribisi actually liked. Yeah. And he like gave him the heads up to get out of the
What
get
I
out
don't
of the
understand,
building.
Though, about the movie is like, how many times do you have to see racing?
They don't race
before
anymore.
Before you go, okay.
They don't race anymore.
No, but like, it's not just racing. It started off as racing. And then it started off with like, we're going to flip over trunks. Just like, we're going to 180 over there. Like, no, you're not. This is my problem with the movie. Not only are you forced to suspend your disbelief that this stuff is possible, you're also supposed to suspend your disbelief in that this is a good movie.
Yeah, it's true. Because like the stunts they do, man. He's flying out of cars.
I'm assuming that
people.
This is another white person thing. I'm assuming that, like, the river, this is a code.
What, Fast and the Furious?
Like, people go watch Fast and the Furious, but they're actually not watching the movie. They're in there having Klans meetings or something like that.
Come on.
Right. I'm just saying.
You can't. There was a movie called Tokyo Drift. Yeah. They were in Japan.
Yeah. Just because I'm not saying the movies don't
exist.
Hey,
Han was there. Hey, you know what Han's name is in, like, so in the movie, his name is Han. And then they did his full name when they're showing everyone's, like information. His name is Han Sol. Oh.
I'm not saying that the movies aren't real. The movies are real. But I'm saying no one actually watches them.
They watch them.
They buy tickets. They go in and they have a Klans meeting.
My friend Kayvon watches them religiously.
So Kayvon is probably a KKK member. Then we don't know.
Jeez.
I've accused him of that.
You can't spell Kayvon without the K.
I'm just pointing out that just like the river, like I used to think when white people said, hey, we're going to go to the river, it was a vacation. They were having a weekend.
They go to Lake Havasu.
They're like, oh, we're going to go down to the river. I was like, but then I realized that it was a secret plot against all brown people.
No, they go to Lake Havasu.
First of all, the lake is in a river.
You know why they call it that? Because the water from Lake Havasu comes from a river. So they call it the river.
Most lakes come from
the river. Yeah, but that's what they call it. That
we're going to go to the Hey, Ali, we're going to hang out at the river this weekend. That I knew. Eventually, I figured out that when they said that was cover for...
You could read...
We're plotting against you brown fuckers.
You could read their subtext?
I could read the subtext.
You know the secret?
I knew the secret. The river and the Fast and the Furious, in my mind, are secret white plots.
They're speaking in codes?
They're secret white plots.
What's wrong with you, man? You would never, like...
Caucasian last... conspiracy.
Ali would never Caucasian last in the South. Like, if someone asked him for some sweet tea, I think he'd get it. You asked me for sweet tea? That means you're trying to rape me.
First of all, I've been to the South before. And none of that is inaccurate. Okay? I've seen Deliverance.
Oh, jeez.
I know what happens.
Where's Deliverance? Like, where does it take place? Mississippi?
I think it's in Mississippi. That shit gives people nightmares. Deliverance. That little tune. You want to freak someone out late at night?
Just play that. I like the smoke on the water one better.
See, I don't have an issue with the South because there's plenty of black people and other people in the South.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't the...
But one... I think there are certain, like, white codes.
Well, like that congressman, the one that, like, was talking shit to Trump, he's from Atlanta, right?
Yeah, there's a current congressman, John Ossoff? Ossoff?
Ossoff, yeah. John Ossoff, yeah, I actually contributed... O-S-S-O-F-F.
Yeah, so not like A-S-I-F.
Not like Ossoff, my
Not like the Middle Eastern
Ossoff. Not like my Ossoff.
Yeah, because I remember when someone's like, are you going to vote for Ossoff? I'm like, Ossoff Manvi?
Yeah, Ossoff Manvi is a good guy, you know. Like, he was on Domino's commercial back
in the day. When did he run for office? John Ossoff is like a 30-year-old super liberal Democrat.
Ooh.
Who's running for Georgia's 6th District. This is Newt Gingrich's old district.
Oh.
So Price, who's now in the cabinet of Trump,
uh-huh,
vacated the seat in their special elections.
Okay.
Republicans and this dude, and awesome. This is not was not meant to be competitive in any way, shape, or form.
No, not at all.
Like he's supposed to lose.
It's a ruby red district.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he won.
He won.
Now he didn't win overwhelmingly because you need to win 50 plus to avoid a runoff election.
What does that mean?
Meaning you have to win 50% of the vote, above 50% of the vote.
Yeah, so you have 51%.
He got 48% of the
which
vote.
Which is absolutely unprecedented.
Yeah. Whereas okay. the closest Republican to him got 18%.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Don't get too excited.
Okay.
The other Republicans will drop out. There will only be one Republican, so Republicans will consolidate around her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if obviously she'll be higher than 18%, it'll be competitive. But here's the thing.
But what does a runoff mean?
A runoff means now there's another election that continues for the next 2 months. There'll be another election in June.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing. Before Republicans go, okay, we he didn't win, right?
Uh-huh.
If you combined all the Republican votes,
uh-huh.
they still would be less than what he got.
Okay.
If you then look at which Republicans aligned closer to Trump, so Gray, one of the candidates,
uh-huh.
was the most Trump candidate,
okay.
pro-Trump. He got less than 1% of the vote.
Yeah. Holy shit.
So this election was a real window into what 2018 may look like.
Yeah.
Okay.
That the closer you align with Trump, the bigger backlash you face. Yeah.
So what do you think is going to happen to like people like Daryl Issa?
So we'll see.
Issa? Issa?
And here's the thing. Before Democrats, just like I said to the Republicans, before they get excited, right?
Uh-huh.
They may, before Democrats get ahead of themselves and they get excited, Ossoff may very well lose the mm-hmm. runoff, right?
Yeah.
Democrats don't do well in runoffs. They can generate like really short-term interest. They can't sustain it. At the end of the day, midterm elections are almost always Republican territory, right? Because
yeah.
millennials don't vote. People yeah. of color don't vote. Those are the two minorities in general, right? They don't vote.
They don't give us a day off.
Right? They don't give us a day off. This is often done during school time, etc. The other thing about this is 2018, there's more Democratic seats up than there are Republican seats.
That's true.
So there's the Democrats are going to be playing defensive.
Yeah.
In 2018. So don't people before, oh, we're going to flip. We're going to flip the House. We're going to flip. No, you're not. You're not. You may change.
Senate.
You may change the Senate a bit. The House, a little bit. Not enough, right? Because uh-huh. the Senate's 4 years. The House, a little bit. What we are seeing, though, is an indication of where nationally things are swinging.
Okay.
So even if the Democrats won't win in 2018,
uh-huh.
what we do see is that the anti-Trump groundswell is real.
Okay. And even that area, actually, Trump only won by like a point and a half or something
yeah.
During the election. And the previous administration there, which is, like we said, Ruby Red, hardline Republican,
mm-hmm.
Was like, I think won by like 26 points, something stupid like
yeah,
that. Like
38 years Republican.
Yeah. They won by like 26 points last time around. So like for John Ossoff to come in and be able to take...
First time
yeah,
representative.
Exactly.
30-year-old. I mean, he's our age.
Seriously. I donated money to the campaign.
You can? Can you
yeah, do you can donate. Yeah. Anyway. You can donate. It's like really, if you're not able to vote, you can uh-huh. donate money, or you can also be part of the phone banks
uh-huh.
and mobilize people.
How many right? dollars did you donate?
I donated...
50 cents.
No. 60 cents.
Nice. $23, like Bernie Sanders. Is that what he's asking for?
$23.
Yeah.
The thing with this is that it tells us Trump was a weird phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
In places that are ruby red, he actually didn't do that well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Georgia's an example of that. Georgia was way closer than it should have been.
Uh-huh.
Texas was way closer than it should have been. Arizona was way closer than that. He lost Orange County.
Yeah.
Right? Which by two nuts, points. Yeah. This is ruby red for almost 90 years.
Nixon country here.
It's Nixon yeah. country. You don't lose Orange yeah. County.
The last person.
He lost it. Where he did, he squeaked out a victory was in blue collar territories.
Yeah.
So Pennsylvania, Wisconsin.
Yeah, the blue wall bullshit.
He didn't win Minnesota. He won Michigan.
The point being, and he only won them like squeaked out.
Yeah.
Less than 60,000 votes.
Yeah. Combined?
80,000. Yeah, combined.
Oh, shit.
Not a lot. Uh-huh. 80,000 is not a lot.
No.
So this tells us that if there's enough of a groundswell, Trump is looking at the one term. He's still likely going to win a re-election because of the way the system's worked out. Incumbents generally win. But he would face the most difficult re-election campaign that we've ever seen.
Maybe that's why he's still campaigning right now.
Oh, of course that's why he's still campaigning. Yeah. One, because he's able to still take on money.
Yeah. Right?
He's done something that other presidents have never done before. He's kept he's started his campaign finances already. He's taking in money. That's a big problem because that means foreign donors can pay him through his campaign finances with his campaign account
uh-huh.
without, you know, oh, we'll donate here.
Like a paper, without like a wink, real paper wink, trail.
Hint, hint. And then he goes, well, thank you for your donation, right?
Okay.
So like, well, you're not bribing him, you're just making donations, right? That's a big issue. The second thing is that he needs to do it because he's up against a wall. A serious anti-Trump wall.
You mean an actual wall this
like
time?
Like a real wall this time. And he may very well win. I'm not saying that he'll lose. But he's going to, it's a very uphill battle for him because his victory margins were so small. And now, even in places where he should be secure, he's losing. And this is part of the demographic shifts anyways, right? The Sunshine Belt is starting to be activated. So the new demographics are going to be, the blue states will involve places like, Virginia is an example of it. Mm-hmm. Virginia is technically a perfect example of what's happening in the future. Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, Georgia, Arizona, California, and then possibly Texas.
California.
California's already blue.
Yeah. Right?
But that's part of the Sunshine Belt. You make all of those blue, that's your victory right there. Like, that's massive.
Like a big smiley face.
Yeah, that's called the Sunshine Belt, right? Okay. So that's it goes through the Southwest. That's what he's looking at. And Ossoff right now, he's whether he wins or lose, he's the little darling of the Democratic Party right now. 30-year-old chosen one.
And plus, it's very symbolic.
He is.
To show the numbers that are being put down, the fact that President Trump, between his visits to Mar-a-Lago, was actually tweeted to try to basically bolster the voting.
And he did robocalls too.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's trying to beat
Ossoff. They didn't fully defeat him. The fact that they didn't, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's the endorsement of the president. That's him actually doing stuff. That's Donald Trump not playing golf and doing stuff.
And more importantly, the Trump candidate isn't even remotely close.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what it is. It's because all those protesters that George Soros paid for are out there.
Yeah.
Fake voting and stuff. You know, I got told I was paid by George Soros today.
No, I'm waiting for my check from George
Soros. Seriously, where's my George Soros check?
No, guy literally accused me of, he's like, yeah, there goes some more Soros protesters. I'm like, yeah, clearly, I'm getting paid by George Soros. He's like, I don't know you well enough. You sure as hell probably can be. And I'm like,
you're an idiot.
Yeah, like,
that's what you should have said. He's like, you're a fucking moron. Like, we are paid by the Russians. One up your conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I saw great. I mean, the hashtags for Ossoff were great.
Right, right.
There was a good vote your Ossoff.
That was a good one.
Flip the Sixth was a good one.
Revenge of the Sixth.
Yeah, Revenge of the Sixth. I mean, that's a May the Fourth be with you. Revenge of the Fifth thing, right? Which is really cool. But there's also what I saw on Twitter today was, do you guys remember Tommy Loren?
Yeah.
Right.
Thomas Loren.
I don't know. You know, she was the hate mongering puppet on The Blaze.
Oh, Tammy.
Yeah.
Ralph's cousin. Ralph Lauren's cousin.
Yeah.
When you said Tommy Loren, I'm like,
Tommy, Tammy,
Tommy Pickles.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. So, the Blaze chick.
Yeah, she tweeted like a Wale lyric or something, and then he quoted it and he wrote, "Same phone, who dis?" And it blew up on Twitter, and now everyone's just going like, "Yeah, we forgot your bitch ass. Everyone forgot who you are."
The great part about it was is that she's suing Glenn Beck for silencing her.
Yeah. But
this coming from the woman that told black people to shut up and sit down, you know, that they shouldn't protest. She's suing because she was quote unquote silenced.
This is
this is too on the nose. Like, this isn't even parody anyway. And that's the funny thing is, like, these people are beyond parody. There was a joke now recently about Trump, right? Because everything Trump's done, people have been bringing back his old tweets.
Right?
It's like someone actually said, like, Trump is actually a time traveling time lord come to warn us about himself. Because literally, like, he'll do something and someone's like, wait a minute, 2013.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, there's this one where he's like, Obama's numbers are bad. Watch him bomb Syria.
Yeah.
And then he bought it. someone retweets it. It's like everything he's did to the point where it's now beyond parody. You know what I mean? Like, it's gotten to the point where it's like, okay, come on.
Well, they're doing that with a lot of pundits, with other politicians, with anyone. And it's like, you know.
Because you leave a record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the internet, motherfucker. People can see that shit.
Yeah. Who do you think you're tweeting to?
Yeah. I don't know, man. Fucking.
It's like, have you ever seen The Office?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Jim.
Creed?
Oh, yeah.
They fuck with Creed, so, like, they didn't want Creed to, like, put his words out there.
Oh, yeah.
So they opened up a Word
document. Yeah, he just opened up a Word document.
www.formsite.creed.com.
No, it was www.creedblogs.com/gov.
And he's, like, he's putting up his thoughts, but it's actually a Word document.
Yeah, it's a Word. And then Ryan's like, I read someone else things. It's better that we leave it there.
So I think for whatever reason, politicians think that it's like a Word document. They don't realize, like motherfucker, you left a record on Twitter.
Truth be told, though, I mean, we've had in the past, I mean, politicians have said a lot of stupid shit, and people have called them to task for it, right? But at the end of the day, did it really do anything to change?
This is the problem. When I teach my students this, too. It's like we discuss when we're talking about crimes against humanity and stuff, we talk about how to prevention. Yeah. We talk about clicktivism.
Clicktivism?
Like one of the things about the internet is that it's made ever like post Kony 2012.
Yeah. Kony 2012.
That was an example of a really successful viral marketing campaign.
Yeah, everyone right? started crying watching.
Everyone, their right? video. I love Kony, right? Like those.
Well, I love Kony. We hate Kony.
It's a joke. Yeah. No, I'm very aware of what fucking Kony did. Joseph Kony did.
Who
are you talking to, motherfucker?
I don't know, man. You old, bro. You senile sometimes.
So I remember.
You got that dementia and shit.
I was joking with the bumper stickers. I love Kony, right? Kony 2012 was like the thing, like, right? The Invisible Children, all that stuff. Viral marketing.
Yeah.
Viral marketing. It was an example that the internet can be used for prevention in very successful ways. But since then, what we've seen is kind of the reverse of that. Is that the internet's fantastic for making things go viral, for getting attention.
Mm-hmm.
For raising awareness, but it doesn't go beyond that.
No.
So we retweet, we share, we post, we comment, but the reality is that we don't actually go out and vote, or we don't actually do anything after that. It's a reason why fucking, you know, people like Representative Steve King still is getting elected.
Well, you know,
people are like, oh my God, I can't believe he said that. Motherfucker, he's been saying that for 20 years.
You know what it is.
It's seen racist shit.
You know why? It's because people are too busy talking about their feelings and their cultural sensitivities.
You know, fuck you. That's not true whatsoever. The point is, that pisses me off endlessly.
We love you, Reza.
You're an idiot. The thing that pisses me off endlessly is this whole, like, we're unable to get beyond, like, we should be able to raise awareness and then go, okay, next step. Yeah. So clicktivism has that limitation, and it's a very serious limitation. Like the Berkeley protests, right? Berkeley protests, there's all sorts of viral things that went out there. That fucker that punched the girl, Nathan DiMaggio, that dude should be in jail.
Should be.
First of all, he's a dishonorably discharged from the Marines.
Yeah, way to go, fuckface.
Armed burglary, openly white supremacist. I mean, and he showed up in all denim. That in of itself
is a Canadian tuxedo.
He showed up in a Canadian tuxedo.
Oh, wow.
I mean, yeah, if everyone, all the ones that claim to be racial superiority... Take a closer look at him. Oh, good Lord. Like Richard Spencer, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all people are like, oh, he's so dapper. Have you seen his face?
He ugly.
He ugly as fuck. Like
U-G-L-Y.
Like all that racial superiority. At the end of the day, you all look like you're inbred motherfuckers.
You can't be ugly shaming people on this podcast, Lily.
Steve Bannon.
Bro, that's true. He is ugly.
This blotchy Jabba the Hutt.
That's true. You also called the whole city of Houston ugly, too.
I did.
So. Call him all fat.
Look.
No, I call them all.
I take serious offense to that. Was I wrong?
To what? Calling them all? I don't know. I've seen some pretty people in Houston.
Texas is a big state, Ali.
Yeah.
I was in Houston. I don't know about the rest of the Texas state. Maybe there's some beautiful people in Dallas. But all I saw in Houston were Steve Bannon wannabes.
Oh, dude. Speaking of which, I will be in Houston for Comic Palooza if anyone wants to come by and visit me at the T-Turtle booth.
I will be in Austin for a bachelor party in a month, although my dumbass cousin Mustafa bought me my ticket for a month.
Yeah. Don't come up and touch Diz, though. You're going to need an ointment after that.
Yeah. You can rub my beard.
Oh. Did either of you see the Star Wars trailer?
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me of The Last Jedi. It reminded me a lot of
the first one. I'm not okay with this.
The Last Jedi.
Right.
Listen, let me be real with you. The only reason I watch Star Wars is because of the Jedi.
Oh, yeah?
If you get rid of the Jedi, I'm done with the series.
But this is the last one.
You are Emperor Palpatine.
That's fucked up.
You are Emperor Palpatine.
I'm pretty sure that's racist.
Listen, I'm a little upset because they didn't mention anything about Galactic Trade Federation deals in the Senate. That kind of pissed me off.
What did you think about the trailer, though?
I was happy with it.
Intense?
You know? Yeah, I love it because one thing Star Wars has always been good at is they always kind of, they're able to kind of bring the butterflies in your stomach.
The nostalgia also comes
in. Yeah, with the teasers and the music.
And this one, it looks like they're also expanding universe-wise a little bit. They look like new ships of some sort there. Yeah. New creatures.
I'm a fan of, and I think Empire is probably my favorite of the movie of the original trilogy.
I think we can all agree Empire
is a favorite.
Empire is probably my favorite, and it's always like it seems like the second of the movie where it's like everything is like backlashing from the front because New Hope was always like a quite literally a New Hope, right? Yeah. The second one is everything begins to fall apart because now the beast has been awoken and now the wrath is coming through, right?
You thought you did well.
Yeah.
But you just pissed us off.
And then the and then if the formula is correct, then the third one is it's like the the rebels find a way to persevere, right? Or they find a way to persevere after the destruction.
Prediction.
What did you think of like the second trilogy? Did you like the second one the best?
I didn't bother.
Attack of the Clones?
No, I like Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith was better, but to be fair...
It was the heart-wrenching of, like, you saw the Jedi dying and shit.
Yeah. And also, I'm not a fan of sand either. It gets everywhere.
Yeah.
And that really pisses me off.
Yeah, I don't like sand. The second one
was dumb. You know why the second one was bad? It was because it was like our first... introduction into Christian Haydenson? Hayden Christensen. Whatever.
I thought you were talking about Christianity for a second. I was like, whoa, bro, come on, man. Too far.
An introduction into Hayden Christensen, and we realized how much of a crap-ass actor he was.
Sog still loves him.
That moment where he's like, Master Obi-Wan, he doesn't like me. That scene in of itself. He's jealous of me. I've never wanted to like reach through the screen and throttle someone before.
Hey man, Sog made me watch Jumper twice.
You know exactly what part I'm talking about.
Yeah.
In some ways, I'm ahead of him. Oh my god, I hate that. Or when he's crying about his mommy. Oh, you fucking piece of shit. I hope your mom dies.
Well, she did.
I know.
It's messed up.
Fuck you, Shmi.
Oh, jeez.
Man, that's
gave birth to the devil.
Luke's grandma.
Yeah. Shmi, is that... see, that sounds like a racial epithet.
It's a racial epithet.
Yeah, Shmi.
They named her Shmi. Shmi's my wife. I never thought I'd hear that sentence ever in my life. The second one, he met the dude. He's like, Shmi's my wife. What the fuck did you say to me?
What?
I hated the second one. No. The third one, not so bad because you get to see the Jedi kind of... like, there was something painful about
it. Yes, right? It's all Anakin. I have the high ground.
Yeah, that was a bad part. But it's like, I think in this movie, we're going to have also... it's going to be emotional.
I think so, too. Yeah. I think Luke dies.
I mean, I think Luke dies also.
Well, I mean, also, I mean, you have to figure the emotions behind with Carrie Fisher, right? Yeah. And they're definitely like...
do you think they kill her off, too?
Carrie Fisher?
In this one? Think they kill her off?
Have to. Well, I mean, they show her in the trailer.
Yeah, you see the back of her head, right?
So they have to do something.
So obviously they're going to do something. And obviously I think people are going to wait and see what they do for Carrie Fisher in the movie because there's obviously going to be a tribute or something. Or
replace her, maybe.
Yeah, or like, you know.
What, they're going to do what they did in The Matrix and like make like a new like Oracle and shit?
It worked for The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Aunt Viv.
Well, you know why? Because they went light-skinned, you know what I'm saying?
That's fucked up.
That's what they did.
The question, though, is like, and here's the thing that I really want to know about. He says, I've come to one conclusion, one truth, or some fucking shit.
I only know one truth.
That the Jedi must end. Why is he training a new Jedi then?
Maybe he's not training a new Jedi.
Maybe he's training a new Sith.
Or maybe what he's doing is he's saying the Jedi Order must end.
That's what I'm... seems more feasible.
People are saying it's Kylo. That's Mark Hamill's voice.
I think it's Mark Hamill.
Too. Mark Hamill's voice. He's got that scratchiness in his voice.
Yeah, I think... okay, it makes sense if he's going to end the organization. Because it's like, by that point, there really isn't the Jedi. Like, the Jedi isn't really around anymore, right?
Yeah, maybe he's come to the conclusion that a Jedi order just means a perpetuation of the cycle.
Yeah.
First come the Jedi, then come the Sith, then come the Jedi, then come the Sith. And he wants to break that cycle.
Yeah.
But the point is, he is still training a Jedi, technically.
Technically.
So... the order may come to an end by him dying, but there's still Rey.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it's a new order. I don't know what he's trying to say.
Well, see, now maybe if his ass finished Jedi school, he'd know what he was talking about.
Hey, was it just me or did Finn look like he was dying or something?
Finn was in some type of...
yeah, like
he was in stasis.
Coma. They're going to put him in the Han Solo fucking like little...
the carbonite?
The carbonite shit.
No, I didn't think he was in the carbonite.
I don't know. Maybe they might put them in...
no, that was not carbonite.
I mean,
it's not carbonite.
I know it's not carbonite, but maybe they put him in that because that's what happened in Empire.
He looked like he was in one of those, like, you know, like at the mall, the tornado silo thing where you sit there in the wind.
Tornado chamber?
He's in a
hurricane simulator.
There's a war and he's having a massage.
Or he's in a, what is a sensory deprivation chamber?
Technically.
Dream about pizza.
I mean,
Poe Dameron.
The first one, The Force Awakens, ended on a bad note. I don't think it follows the formula. Because the first one ended with, oh shit, there goes a bunch of planets. Oh shit, there goes Han Solo.
Yeah.
They destroyed the planet thingy.
You know, that's not the first time. It wasn't the first time a Han Solo died on camera. Just saying, bro. They killed Han Solo in Tokyo Drift before.
He's dead.
They killed They killed Han Solo and Tokyo Drift first.
Just be quiet.
Fast and the Furious did it first.
Thing is, though, A New Hope also, Obi-Wan had died.
Yep.
Right? And then, you know, there was, and then they destroyed Alderaan.
Yep.
Right? And then they, and then Vader brought in that weird beholder cube thing with the hypodermic needle.
Yep.
You know, and got her all addicted to the to D&D that heroin. And
Star Wars illusion all at once.
Yeah. Nerd alert.
Yeah, seriously.
Hit him with that nerd alert.
Nerd. But,
you know, and then in you know, in the in Phantom Menace, you know, the best character, Qui-Gon Jinn, you know, died also.
Quan Chi.
Yeah. From Mortal Kombat 4.
Hey, listen.
Skulls at people.
Quan Chi was able to master, you know, death.
He was a sorcerer.
Just like Qui-Gon Jinn was able to master death.
That's true.
Just like Dark, what's his name? Pelagius.
Ah.
Right?
Dark Pelagius.
Dark Pelagius the Wise.
Yes, the Wise.
Do you think they show Supreme Leader
Smoke?
Yeah, Snoke.
Snoke, he's in it. He's got to be in it.
Yeah.
Everyone's because everyone's curious about him.
Watch, he's actually Snoke and Shmi. These are the names that the universe.
Bro. You know that there's some douchebag sitting up there just, throwing words together.
And I'm pretty sure they just figured it out because they were sitting there eating peanut butter on celery sticks, and then he tried to say something.
Shmi,
and they're like, okay, you know, let's just go with that.
Perfect. The chosen one's mother. Shmi.
Snoke. It's like smoke, but with an N.
Ooh, you creative.
Yeah, it's like, oh, get him a job.
It's the guy. It's the guy that comes in. They paid like $6 billion. All right, look,
I got it. We're going to make this guy. We're going to make him really big, and he's going to be smoke colored. And, ooh, that's a good name. We're going to call him Snoke. He's smoke colored. We're going
to
call him Snoke.
Seriously, like, I mean, they went from Palpatine to Snoke. It was a downgrade if I ever saw one.
But, you know, I mean, let's.
Pelagius.
The
Pelagius.
Names.
Pelagius.
The names have never been good, especially with the Sith Lords.
No.
Darth Maul.
Darth Vader.
Yeah. Savage Opress.
Like, seriously?
Well, you know.
Savage Opress.
Yeah.
And Darth Vader. Dark Father.
Yeah. Darth Tyrannus.
Darth Tyrannus.
What is it, like a dinosaur?
Tyrannus, literally.
Yeah, that was Dooku's name, right?
Darth Tyrannus.
Yeah.
Oh, like a Tyrannus.
Darth Bane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they've never been that good.
What, have they had, like, cool names for, like, the Jedi? What?
Plo Koon.
Plo Koon's a good name.
Mace Windu.
Mace Windu.
What were the other ones?
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
That's a weird name.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah.
So, slightly Asian-sounding names for really white people.
Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. Luke Skywalker, that's kind of generic.
He walks the skies.
Well, because I feel like they're, when they...
Plo Koon, I think, is the coolest name.
Yeah, the original
conception. Kidding, I mean, or whatever.
What?
Idi Amin?
Not Idi Amin. Kidi Amin something.
That's an Arab name, bro.
Well, there's the...
it's the guy with a big forehead.
I always felt like when I first watched Star Wars and I like thought about the Jedi, I think they almost took that almost Orientalist ancient spiritualism, right?
Didn't he get that movie from a...
Well, it's part of it comes from the Ronin movies.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
And, of course, the whole Jedi are what? Samurai.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, oh, okay, yeah. So it's got that Seventh Samurai kind of feel.
Yeah, they got swords and shit.
Now, let me ask you guys something. How do you feel about this as a Jedi name? Ardian Saif.
What?
You guys hear about this?
Arnie.
It's an Indonesian name.
Ardian Saif.
Arnie Saif, but they say Saif because it's Indonesian pronunciation.
Wasn't that one of your fucking, like...
Saif?
Yeah.
It was one of my nicknames when I was debating.
Yeah.
It means the raised sword.
You piece of shit. Fucking cocky lethal bastard.
Lethal in the
did anyone else call you that besides you?
I never called myself Saif.
He's full of shit.
Oh,
my
really?
Mom called me Saif, but that's cause, not because,
cause,
of,
cause
not because of my debating, but because she really liked the name. I was originally supposed to be Saif. Saif Ali.
Oh, really?
My nickname.
So you never had the moment where she's all like, Ali, and you're like, Mom, call me Saif.
No. She wanted me to call me Saif, but my dad vetoed it.
Yeah, good. It was a good move on his part. We didn't need you to be even more cockier than you are now.
It was going to be Saif Ali, and then it was going to be Masi,
ooh,
which means Messiah.
That's it.
That got vetoed,
yeah.
And so they went with Ali, Supremely Exalted One. They went with a slightly less arrogant title. They went, Messiah's too arrogant. We'll call him the Supremely Exalted.
They just named you Kharkus.
They named me Ali.
She just named you.
The name, which is one of the names of God in Arabic.
If they should have named you Kharkus and see what you turned out to be.
That would have been genius still.
You know, interesting.
And then my debate team called me Saif.
Interesting story behind my name. When I was born, my parents were like, hey, let's name him V.
They bit into a piece of peanut butter.
Let's name him V. And they were like, okay.
Sorry.
And that's what happened.
Yeah. My story is, I was named after my father's uncle, Daoud. Yep. So now I'm Dawood.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very stupid. Why can't they give me cool
names? I named my sisters.
I named my middle brother.
Yeah, but the two sisters, I named them.
You named them.
Wow.
Both.
There's going to be some weird ones.
Where the hell did you get Juana from?
I just heard it somewhere.
It's a stupid name.
I'm pretty sure you got it from
the princess. She was supposed to be something else. I forgot what it was. Lemma was supposed to be McKees.
That's a bad one.
That's a bad one. McKees. I saved Lemma. No, Lemma.
Well, it's not a bad name, but it's just hard to pronounce.
Like, McKees is like you're teased.
Yeah.
See, I'm pretty sure you got Juana. Yeah, you were watching Princess Bride, and you heard Andre the Giant be like, anyone want a peanut? And then you're like, oh, hey, Juana, that's a good name.
No, I heard one of our family friends was named Juana, so that's where I got it.
Yeah, well, look what happened.
I named my brother Masood. Because my uncle's name is Masood, and I kept calling him Kaka Masood in the belly. my dad's like, we're going with that name. We're naming him after my brother.
Okay, we've gone way too far.
Yeah, what are we talking about? Saif
Al-Fayyaf.
So Ardian Saif, this Indonesian artist, actually amazing artist. He did some,
Gold.
Batgirl, I think, in D.C.
Yeah, he did some
D.C. And he's actually one of the artists that I think really replicates Jim Lee's style pretty well, but he has some pretty fine detail that Jim Lee doesn't always do or quite do.
Yes, Jim Lee.
He just released, they just released X-Men Gold number 1 earlier this month.
Okay.
April 5th, I think, was kind of the premiere date.
Okay.
And it was, you know, really highly anticipated. I remember going to the comic book shop and there being, like, all sorts of... You know, like those the cards that are telling you this new series is coming out or whatever. Yeah. There's all sorts of advertisements.
Was there 72 right? virgins waiting outside the store for the comic book?
Wow.
Yeah, I took it there.
Wow. This is why he's a dickbag.
I know. It's true. Carry on, sir.
I will remind you, it was a comic book store. So
there were 72 virgins waiting outside the door, bro. That's why I said it.
These were the 72 virgins I expected. Shit!
Just V 72 times.
Comic book nerds. Fuck! Terrorists are in for a rude awakening.
Just V and his
friends. That'd be really funny. Actually, no. It's like they die and they go to Comic-Con. Like, it's shit.
And not this even, is not what I wanted.
And not even the good one with like Jessica Negri in it, right? It's like the one from like the 1996.
Right? No!
Cosplay is like Princess Jasmine and shit the whole time.
Anyway, so he caused a huge controversy because the artwork that he had used or that he had made for X-Men Gold number 1 had a lot of kind of these hidden messages, these false flags, this dog whistle politics.
It was dog whistling, not false flag.
Yeah.
Stop using these terms.
Sharia law.
Hey,
son of a bitch.
God damn it.
Subterranean conspiracy.
What the fuck is this guy talking about?
Gogurt gayness.
What? He's Alex Jones again.
He's saying Gogurt gayness.
Did you guys hear about Alex Jones ever roofing?
Yeah, with his stupid lawyer.
His lawyer's like, he's playing a character.
I apologize. He
lost all credibility.
Yeah.
I didn't mean anything with Pizzagate. It wasn't real.
I'm a red blooded American.
Sometimes it just makes me so sad.
He can do this impersonation for years.
Motherfucker. I'm sorry, Eccles. I don't.
Okay, stop it before I punch you in the beard.
I'm gonna like kill myself doing that.
So, before Gogurt turns you gay and all that stuff, we don't need to go into that. That's for another episode. But so, essentially, if you look at the art,
okay,
there are certain things that have to do with pretty hard Indonesian politics that he kind of slipped into his art. Now, this is something that a lot of comic artists already do.
Okay,
right? There's a great artist. I think he's a Vietnamese guy who the publishers be like, listen. Stop fucking drawing Howard the Duck. And then he made it a point to draw Howard the Duck in every single comic book that he had drawn after that, right? There's a great one.
Artists are always rebelling against their publishers. Yeah.
If you ever read Secret Invasion, there's a great... It's my favorite panel, right? It's randomly, like, all the Marvel heroes are fighting the Skrulls, right? And there's just one panel, and the Skrull is literally holding Howard the Duck by the neck. And he's got, like a revolver, and he's, like, trying to point it at him while he's getting choked out. It's really funny, right? It's just this ridiculousness. But whereas, you know, a lot of artists just kind of do this out of fun, uh-huh. right? Saif did this thing where he was putting in these really hardline political messages,
uh-huh.
right? A lot of it was considered to be anti-Semitic, anti-Christian. Ooh. One of the big things also, like you see it here, is that there's a panel where it shows Kitty Pryde, Shadow Cat, right? And uh-huh. she's next to a jewelry store. But the part of the actual sign is covered, and it just says Jew over Kitty Pryde.
Kitty Pryde is Jewish.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's clarifying.
Wait, she's a China Jew?
Kitty Pryde isn't Chinese. She's
not, yeah, Jubilee is Chinese. Oh,
Jubilee is Chinese. Okay.
Kitty Pryde is
yeah. Kitty Pryde is Juno.
Sort of.
She's Juno.
Oh yeah, no, because it was played by
Ellen. Page. Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Ellen Page. Yeah, yeah. Now there's also they're playing. There's one panel where they're playing baseball, and Colossus uh-huh. is wearing a baseball shirt, right? And on it says QS551.
Okay.
Right now, I don't know. You're gonna have to.
It's Quranic verse.
Yeah, you have to educate me on this, Lee. But I think it has reference. It references the fact that you shouldn't have. Like if you're a Muslim, then you should be making rules for Muslims, or it's like something along the lines of like
it's used in Indonesia specifically to say. I mean, that's not what the verse says, but it's interpreted by Indonesia in this political context to say you shouldn't have non-Muslim leaders.
Yeah, because there is they have a very controversial politician who's a Christian. Who is doing a lot of things, and there is a really big based out of Jakarta, like a big kind of a backlash.
And Indonesia has the most Muslims per like square.
It's the most populous Muslim country in the world. The issue is not the fact that he's Christian, because Indonesia is actually a left. It's actually technically a secularist country, and it's been run by the Democratic Party of Struggle or whatever it's called, right? The Indonesian Democratic Party of Struggle. Their logo is a fucking bull, right? It's left-leaning democratic. The issue is that the politician in question, Purnama, who is ethnically Chinese, religiously Christian.
Basuki Tahaja Purnama.
Yeah, Purnama got in trouble because supposedly he made some anti-Quran, like he made some disparaging remarks about the Quran.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he didn't. What he did is he referenced the idea that people vote based off of their prejudices and their verses. Yeah. And then the hard right in Indonesia has been using that. But this is part of Indonesia's history, right? So Indonesia was a dictatorship for a long time, an authoritarian dictatorship. It had dealt with a massive purge. General Suharto took over in the 60s, and he led an anti-communist purge.
Okay.
From the previous president. The founding president was Sukarno. Ah. So with a K, right? So don't confuse them. They sound very similar.
What's their name?
Suharto.
Suharto and Sukarno.
Sukarno. And Suharto led these anti-communist purges.
Okay.
And as a result, what happened was the leftist and the communists were considered to be ethnically Chinese.
Okay.
Right, so there was this notion of like the ethnic Chinese being foreign.
Okay,
this authoritarianism remained intact until like 1998. And what happens, and this is very similar to the situation in Bosnia where there was a communist leader, when there are these totalitarian or authoritarian regimes, the tensions are capped off. They're under control because the authoritarian's got an iron fist. Same thing in Egypt, right? Under Mubarak, the tensions don't exist. Under Bashar al-Assad, the tensions don't exist. They boil up, but nothing ever happens because the government is your real enemy.
Mm-hmm.
When the government fractures, or when you move towards democracy, suddenly all those tensions that were there and was quietly being kind of talked about and discussed boil over into the politics. So with Purnama, what's happening is that it's going back to this deep-seated, long tradition of viewing the ethnically Chinese
as the enemy,
foreign,
okay,
subversive, and communist. And then you have the hard right, which is known as the Islamic Defensive Front or some shit like that, right?
The IDF.
And they are, or the Islamic Front Defense or something.
IFD.
They are, what they are doing is they're now using that verse that Saif cited.
QS551.
Do not vote for a non-Christian. If you are a Muslim.
Non-Muslim.
If you were a Muslim, you cannot vote for a non-Muslim.
Okay.
So this is where it's coming from. People often interpret this kind of just religious tension. It's not. There's ethnicity involved. There's the politics of communism and leftist politics versus conservative and traditional politics. Because technically Indonesia is a secularist country that has a different ideology.
It just has a high population of Muslims.
This
Saif dude sounds like a dick.
But it's being articulated in some instances because they're part of the coalition against Purnama is these religious conservatives.
Yeah, right.
The former education minister, who's the kind of the guy challenging Purnama, is the one who's kind of agitating these kind of arguments because he's going, if I can rally the Muslims, By saying this shit, I can win.
Because he's technically facing a blasphemy trial right now, right?
But he's winning. Purnama, despite having a little dip in the polls from that blasphemy trial, he's actually ahead in the polls.
So
he's
there's
likely win.
I think the important lesson...
We'll know, by the time this podcast comes out.
Wait, so what's happening with the Sife dude?
I think the important lesson behind this, before we get into that, is that there are multiple factors that go into it, right? It's easy for you to come here and say, well, he put Muslim, you know, subversive Muslim imagery in it, and now... And now that's the reason why there's all these issues. But there are a lot more things going on within the
Indonesia is really complicated that people don't realize.
Yeah.
They didn't have their first real elections until the 2000s.
Seriously.
I mean, Suharto, General Suharto ruled until 1998.
It's not just it's not just Bali, right? Like there's so much more. I mean, it's no different from the complexities of our own American government, right? So what happens with Saif now is that he obviously got fired.
Fired
now Marvel, what they're doing is they pulled all the X-Men Gold number ones and number twos off the shelf, right? So the prices for those comic books have shot up because people bought them the second that they found out, right? They're going to re-release a second printing, right? And they're going to remove all the imagery. The question is, are they going to just kind of, are they going to put something over it, or are they going to actually reduce the, we don't know. We're not really sure yet.
He's got, and Saif is kind of unrepentant from what I hear, right?
He kind of, well, it is, he is,
like,
he is.
He's like, this is the politics.
Yeah, he actually, it's really interesting because the two articles that I read when it came to him was that on one side, apparently he's all like, well, Marvel's owned by Disney. Disney's owned by Jews.
Unrepentant.
But there's another one where I think he tweeted, he put up on his social media. It's all like, I literally ruined my opportunity he's all like, you gotta realize like I didn't mean for these things to be viewed negatively. It's like these things to me mean love and this and that.
Yeah, it's still though. He's ruined his chance.
He really did. And this is what's sad is that this is, I mean, for God's sakes, to be able to work for Marvel Comics and to be an artist that's not an American, to be able to do
that. There's a part of me that's like unforgivable. Like, it's one thing to insert Indonesian politics into it. It's another thing to start putting anti-Semitic and anti-Christian statements in there.
It's crazy because comic books, of all things, because like Marvel is
X-Men comics.
Yeah. Think about it. Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, both Jews, right? I mean, the guy who wrote X-Men Gold, like the actual writer, is also a Jew, right? The X-Men themselves represent a vulnerable minority class within America or within a population that doesn't understand them. And for him to put those type of messages in something, I understand maybe where he saw the connection to his own, to, you know, the plight in to his personal plight, but definitely the wrong place to put it.
Yeah.
We're in the age of just tone deaf ridiculousness. Right. And Marvel is very left leaning, very progressive in a lot of their views. Right. They're all about comic books and artists really, showing their views and showing how, you know, and talking against what's going on. But in order for that to happen, it's like you can't be putting some ridiculousness like that in a comic book.
Especially given, even if you were just, even without the kind of anti-Semitic and anti-Christian elements to it, if you were just introducing Indonesian politics, there's a lot to be unpacked there, and it's too complicated for you to introduce to an American audience. So just don't do it, right? It's unwise.
And that's the thing, is the Indonesians are the ones who brought the attention to it. It wasn't the American audience.
Well, yeah, because the Indonesians are the ones who recognize the language of it. Because they're, I mean, it's getting, this manship is getting really, it's getting heated. They're putting up posters with the stuff like that up. And it is, it's the opposition to Purnama. So it's interesting stuff. We'll cover Indonesia a little bit because the elections, we'll find out about them real soon. We'll find out what happens. And I think Purnama's going to win. He's ahead in the polls. So we're going to introduce, speaking of kind of politics, we're going to introduce kind of a new segment that we tried out. We're going to be interviewing someone from the Afghan-American community to talk a little bit about what happened recently with the dropping of the mother of all bombs, the so-called mother of all bombs in Afghanistan. So this is, we're going to hopefully have more interviews probably with bigger, you know, individuals, some people from other communities, people with different backgrounds, just so you get to hear people other than us give an opinion. So this interview was pre-recorded, and we're going to play a little bit of it. Hopefully it is useful for all of you.
Yeah, and we must preface this with, this is our first time doing it, so don't get mad at us if the audio sucks.
Yeah, there's some technical glitches. We're still figuring it out, so be patient with us.
All right, welcome to our very first inaugural interview at Currently Nerdy. We're very excited to try out this new format, hoping to bring more voices onto the podcast. I am excited to introduce Reza Hassabi, who is an activist, a med student, and along with Medina Nouri, is a facilitator at the Afghan American Conference, where he leads one of the more popular sessions on Afghan-American identity. So welcome, Reza. Glad to have you on. How are you doing on this really late night?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on Currently Nerdy and to talk to you guys.
Well, we love having you on. You are, we're big fans, and we know you listen occasionally. So now, you know, you're on the other side. You get to see how messy the podcast process actually is.
It's cool. It's cool. It's like one of those episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood where the postman comes in and shows how the candy gets made or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. Except there's no candy.
Oh, man.
So, we wanted to actually talk to you because you've had, as a Afghan American, you've had some very interesting thoughts about what's going on in Afghanistan, the war on terror, and with the recent news of the Trump administration dropping the so-called mother of all bombs in Nangarhar, it's really rehashed a lot of these conversations. So I wanted to start off by just asking you, where were you when you heard the news, and what were some of your first impressions?
I was in bed, actually, just relaxing. And I saw someone post about it on Facebook, which is often the case. Like the news that I hear often comes from someone posting it on Facebook before it even gets to like a news outlet. And I have a lot of friends who work in Afghanistan currently. And so it was one of them basically stating that they were safe in Afghanistan. So I decided to look up what was happening, found out about the mob. And I think my very first reaction was there was a pit in my stomach, not necessarily of worry or fear, but just of, I was shocked that something so big had happened in Afghanistan when for so long the news had forgotten about Afghanistan. We had forgotten about Afghanistan in a lot of ways in terms of our discourse online. I know that people are active out there working every day to keep Afghanistan relevant and stop the war there. But in terms of the way we speak about war online, Syria had been dominating for a long time. And so to see Afghanistan put back into the spotlight in such a horrific way, it was shock at first that I was feeling.
You mentioned something really interesting there, the idea that we have forgotten about Afghanistan, and we as a kind of a collective, right? Americans, Afghans, etc., or Afghan Americans. And do you think a part of this is because of the fact that this is the longest U.S. war? I mean, we've been in Afghanistan for 16 years, roughly. So do you think it's almost become normalized? Like, this is just going on in the backdrop constantly, and it doesn't kind of filter its way up to the top of the news feed until something big like this happens?
I mean, I think two things. One, a lot of people are still out there. You and I and Diz are friends with these people who are working every day to keep Afghanistan on top of people's news feeds. And so I don't want to take away from the good work that they do. It's tireless. There are people out there who haven't forgotten about Afghanistan, but I just think in the way that people saturate news feeds and saturate headlines, it's been forgotten. And it does take huge events like this, and I'm not sure if it's, and this is my second point, I'm not sure if that's normal in terms of the way our news cycle works, that it only takes big events to make something relevant again. It only takes some horrific act of war. So I don't know if that's just the way things are in the news cycle or not, and it's kind of sad if it is, because then, I mean, it gets exhausting after a while, horrific event after horrific event, bringing things up again.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we at Currently Nerdy in particular, we've been talking about the media. I mean, everyone's been talking about the media since the Trump election in particular, and looking at structurally what's going on and how this leads to pitfalls, whether it's coverage of certain crimes over others, privileging certain types of violence in the media, versus others, and the issue of for example, what gets covered internationally. Afghanistan and Yemen sometimes get forgotten. They're not front page news. So that's really interesting that you bring up. I also wanted to ask you, you run a, you facilitate one of the more popular sessions at the Afghan American Conference. For people who don't know, the Afghan American Conference is a yearly conference put on by professional Afghan Americans from the diaspora. It includes some people from Canada and Europe, but mostly it's Afghan Americans who get together. There's students and professionals who talk about various critical issues related to their community. And so you're very keenly focused on this idea of a hyphen identity. And I wanted to ask you, how does that play into your relationship with the fact that there's a war going on, quite literally, between the two countries that inform your identity? The American side and the Afghan side. So how does that play a role in your understanding of the war, the feelings that you have, and even how you digest the information that's coming out of this area and this conflict? no pressure, you know, just let's dive right in on this.
You're lobbing the softball questions. Here. That's your job, right, tonight, give me the softball questions. So there are a lot of moving parts to those questions. I think the most salient theme, or for me at least, when it comes to this hyphenated identity, is that when I see the news about Afghanistan, my first instinct is to care about and worry about the people that are getting hurt the most, which are the grunts and the Afghan civilians. So individuals who are in the military are both perpetrators of war and victims of war at the same time. They are, they come back broken more often than not because they have done awful things or were forced to do awful things. And then you have Afghan civilians who are stuck between a government rife with corruption and missiles raining down from the sky. And in terms of navigating my hyphenated identity, I focus the most on those two populations, because those are the people most affected by war. The politicians and the news reporters, the generals, those folks are the ones who are sort of pulling the strings, for whatever reasons that they have: resources, materials, egos, agendas. And so my loyalties aren't to them or to whatever they represent in terms of like nationalism or whatever. I'm a patriot insofar as I care about my fellow Americans, and I care about the people who, if my parents hadn't left Afghanistan, would be my neighbors. And so I think that's how I try to manage my thoughts regarding the fact that I was born here, but my ancestry is back in Afghanistan. If that makes any sense, I don't know. That's
really powerful. And I love, there's a phrase you used, moving parts or moving pieces. And I think that really speaks to the dynamic component of what you're talking about here. We got V, who's going to ask our next question, my fellow co-host here at Currently Nerdy. So V, take it away.
Given the current political landscape, you have a lot of big saber rattling, a lot of very emphatic statements from people like the former President Hamid Karzai, who's saying that President Ghani's, you know, is a traitor and his administrations are being traitors. And he's also claiming that Daesh is a U.S. contract, right, in order to test their weapons in Afghanistan. You also have a very conservative spokesperson, Amin Karim, saying that this was nothing more than a kind of a saber rattle to people like North Korea and Syria and Iraq. You know, in your opinion, do you feel like these claims are true? Like, is it really just kind of a test area for the U.S. to kind of rattle its saber at these other places, or are they really trying to go in there and do something that they feel is right?
Neither option. All foreign policy is domestic. When leaders take actions abroad, they are sending a message to either their base or to their opponents. Trump is satisfying a constituency's need for blood and war, and also showing his opposition the reach of his power. So for the pundits to state that, oh, this is a message to North Korea, North Korea doesn't give a shit about how, what we do. They will continue to do whatever the hell they want. And more importantly, they will continue to work within the limits and boundaries that the Chinese government has placed on them. So maybe there is some calculation about what North Korea thinks, but most importantly to any leader working or making actions abroad, what they care about is what their actions say domestically, because North Korea is not going to vote them back into power. North Korea is not going to fill up the rallies, and North Korea is not going to get them votes when they need them on legislation that needs to be passed.
Kind of as a follow-up, what do you say to those people, Afghans included, that actually think that this was a good idea, that maybe sending that bomb in Afghanistan is actually doing some good, and it's going to stop Daesh from getting bigger, or maybe stop their stronghold in Afghanistan? Because I've seen a lot of people on Facebook and other places, Afghans included, that do agree with what's going on.
Nothing. I don't talk to those people. Because my entire viewpoint since the election has been that if you aren't willing to listen to me, and if you aren't willing to not just listen to me, but work with me, then you're not worth my time. You're not like the enemy or anything like that. You're just a neutral party that I don't care about, because I am far more interested in building up influence and power on the side of what I believe to be progressive and what I believe to be socially just than to convince people who don't want to be convinced to my side. And I think that that's one of the key things that people like Karl Rove and President Obama's election team discovered when they were running their campaigns. It's that the way to win an election isn't to convince people to come to your side. It's to find out those people who like you, find out those people who could like you, who are open to liking you, and then churn them out. Make sure that they go out and vote in every way possible. Mail-in, ballot, go there the day of, provide them rides, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm taking that kind of same ethos to the way that I conduct myself in the social justice sphere. If you are so adamant about your opinion in your way that I believe is harmful, then more power to you, do what you need. I'm over here going to build up my base of support, and I'm going to work against what I believe is socially unjust.
We should state that Reza actually is a little bit of a political insider, so that was some good insight that we had there, given your background in politics a little bit there. And so that was fantastic. I wanted to ask you, that ties into that, and this will be our final question before we kind of wrap up our interview, is going forward, in addition to the kind of obvious of we'd like to see an end to the war, what would you like to see happen? Would you like to see this be a wake-up call with more mobilizing and organizing? Would you like to see a push for an anti-war movement, accountability? What is it that you hope comes out of this this kind of tragic moment, or this alarming moment, more than anything else?
I think there already is an anti-war movement, and there already is a get out of Afghanistan movement. And there are plenty of people who are, again, working really hard on that every single day. I think what I want to see come out of this is our allies who are with us doing that work every day, and who are able to step up and step back as needed, so that we can achieve our goals, or whoever is working in those anti-war movements can achieve their goals. Because the problem is right now is, like, I mean, if there was a LA protest, and it was kind of like the the opposite of what I'm saying now. There were plenty of allies and not very many Afghans who showed up at the LA protest. And I think that, I don't know, it's such a multifaceted problem. The quick, short, and neat answer is that I want the people who are Afghan and live here in America, who have not sort of united in any concerted effort, to really reconsider the divisions that they've participated in and reconsider the positions that antagonize each other. Because we have accrued, compared to the Afghans who are living in Afghanistan, we have accrued a massive amount of wealth and influence and structural power. And I think that if we mobilize behind those who are already working as part of the anti-war movement, we can achieve some sort of basis for peace in Afghanistan that doesn't rely on foreign aid. So I think the great things that we've achieved here can be directed back to the motherland. And if anything, I'd want to see that happen.
Thank you. That was a very, I think, poignant and insightful answer. Mm-hmm. I think the purpose of the interview was really to put a face to this conversation, that this is not just something that's going on amongst political pundits having a conversation, but that there are real people who are affected by this, and people on the ground who are experiencing the quite literal effects of a bomb, to also people who have deep connections to the country of Afghanistan, who are shaped by the fact that there is a war going on. So thank you, Reza, for joining us on our kind of inaugural interview. You were awesome, and we really appreciate you gave. Hopefully we can have you on again and have more interesting conversations. But I think that we've taken enough of your time up tonight. So thanks for joining us, Reza.
No, man. Thank you guys for having me. And next time we can talk about how Cyclops and Captain America are actually amazing heroes, and Superman is like the best comic book okay, of all time.
We can't have Reza on ever again.
All right. Sounds good. At least just afraid. Afraid of my brilliant logical arguments, of course.
Of course.
See you guys. Thank you so much.
So thank you for tuning in to this episode of Currently Nerd. We're going to have Diz take us out.
Yeah. Like always, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/currentlynerdy. You can find us on Twitter, @currentlynerdy on Twitter. We're on Instagram, @currentlynerdy on there as well. Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. We're on the YouTube, search Currently Nerdy on there. We should have a new video coming out soon. We're also on Google Play and Stitcher Radio. So for all the people who don't have iPhones, you can find us on Google Play and Stitcher Radio. And we're also on iTunes. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can I get a hold of you?
So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. You can find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. Ali?
You can catch me on Twitter at AAOLOMI or on my website at AliOlomi.com. Diz.
You can find me everywhere at Dizbulla, DizBullah.
For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you.
Unless you go to the fucking Fast and Furious shit.
Well, that's just my people.